How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just rolling out of the rack, welcome to it. 7:12 here on a Friday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer, Pierre McGuire, Jim Montgomery coming up on the show a little bit later on. We got lots to talk about, lots of sports going on last night, but a few wrenches to start off this hour on this wrench-throwing Friday. Surplus helicopter jet engine wrench, please, to minus temperatures in the forecast for this weekend. Thanks, that's from Unsigned.
Surplus helicopter jet engine.
Wrench to Simmer for hating on the hip and 50 mission cap.
I'll pass on that, bad boy.
I'd like to throw a wrench at the PGA Tour, the USGA, and the wingless foot for not using the stat tracker. What am I supposed to do all day at work? That comes from Unsigned.
The guy is drunk.
You could actually just watch it on the TSN app, right? You could just watch golf all day. In fact, Coverage starts at 7:30 this morning. They're already underway for round two. How did you look at your pool? I've got your pool picks in front of me, by the way, Sam.
You know what? I scanned through some of the name or the leaderboard a few times yesterday. I did not recognize anyone that I had picked.
Okay, you don't have JT. Justin Thomas has the first round lead. You did not pick him?
I don't think so.
He was in the first grouping.
Yeah.
Who'd you pick out of the first group? Dustin?
Yeah, I must have. I know. I don't even recall. I went through and did also the NFL picks of the weekend. What's my score at?
You are at, let's see, you're at a smooth... you're in 628th place.
Nice.
30 over par.
My goal is the top 1,000, so I'm actually ahead of it.
You're good.
Going into Friday.
I am 445th I'm a plus 17.
Well, that's a little concerning with your golf background.
My
and your knowledge of it.
Will rally. I'm a little bit disappointed in our Ches Reavy pick.
Oh, man.
Ended up at five over.
I should have went with Chase Levy. That's who I initially thought he was.
Yes.
Where's the Hammerman?
I'm a couple of shots behind JR. I'm at plus 19 at 491 overall.
So once again, I'm leading the show. No surprise there.
No, not once again. Finally.
little tip of the cap to our friend Matty K. Matty Vowles.
He's under par.
He is three under and in 21st place.
Wow. He did pretty well in the last one as well.
I think he was first. He beat me last. That son of a gun.
Where the hell's he getting his information?
Anyway, Silver Fox and Lefty Strong.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
Lefty Strong are tied for the lead right now at 10 under.
That's an excellent point right there. Right, he's getting old El Hamo to give him some scoops.
Just listen to tee it up. He'll be just fine. Saturday morning, 8 to 10.
That's true. Good call.
So there we go. So good luck to everybody with their picks. We got three more days to get through.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So we got a long way between now and apparently. So, Wingfoot, the scoring average, I was talking yesterday, right? And we had Bob Weeks on as well, this is, not even arguably, it is the toughest course that the pros will play at any major at all. Wingfoot is that tough a course, but it was relatively toothless yesterday because there was not a lot of wind, like the weather was not a concern.
Yeah.
And apparently they put the pins in a lot of easy-to-get-to places.
Ooh.
To the point where the members and the greenskeepers and the greenskeeper were irate at how easy the course was playing because they wanted to play really, really hard because this is their course and they want the pros to struggle.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a quick start, right? Let them go a little bit easy. But we know the USGA hates under par scores.
Correct.
Yeah. So they're going to punish them.
And you know what, Hammer, I agree. Like started off Thursday, Friday, but also when you get into, first of all, how difficult it is to play four rounds, but as you get into the grind and the pressure, that's when you turn it up on Saturday and Sunday. I don't need the grind on a Thursday, so I think the way they've set this up is perfect.
Day two today, it'll probably be play a little bit tougher, or we'll see. But the other struggle right now is they the one reasoning that I read, which kind of makes a little bit of sense, I guess, is that they don't want guys to have to. They don't want long rounds where guys are looking for balls and making it difficult because they're run because of the time of year. They're running into daylight issues. So right now they've got 144 guys they got to get through in a day. Now after today, it's the top 60 in ties that move on to the weekend. So much easier, obviously, at that point to be able to get everybody in under the wire of daylight. But that is part of the rationale that I heard. Don't know if I believe it or not, but I guess it makes a little bit of sense as to why the course maybe played a little bit easier yesterday.
You mentioned about a month ago, and I ended up looking it up, Augusta, Georgia, what it's going to look like in November. We've also gone to the time change at that point. Is the field for the Masters the same size as the U.S. Open?
No, it's always small.
Small, okay.
It's like 90 guys.
Okay, so a little bit easier, but still, you know, you're dealing with, you know, completely different shift in, also falling back, right? We've got the shorter evening, how you're going to end up doing that.
They've they actually already said, because CBS broadcasts the Masters, and because they'll be in the middle of, that's a football weekend as well, and CBS has NFL rights, that they want the Masters over with by the time the late afternoon game kicks off, right? Because they want to go right from the Masters.
So
right
around
to
4:30?
Well, before that. They probably want to work in time for a playoff as well.
Wow,
like we're talking about the leaders teeing off at probably 10 in the morning, so that they're done by 2 or 2:30.
Okay.
That's the time frame they're looking at. Because it gets dark.
Yeah.
Like the that's the weekend after the time change.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be getting dark at like, what, 5, 5:15 in the afternoon?
No, I remember looking it up. Yeah, it's around that. I think it'll look kind of cool, though. Now, normally, think of Augusta, and it's spring, and it's gorgeous, and we're looking outside, and there's snow on the ground, thinking, okay, this is going to come at some point. To see George in the fall and what the golf course looks like. Something that we've never seen. I think it's going to be really cool.
All right, you can watch all the golf coverage all day and all weekend long on TSN. As we said, round two coverage will begin on television at 7:30 this morning. A couple of tweets have come at us. We spent some time in the first hour talking. We got around to your wife, Hammer, is in Oshawa this weekend.
Yeah, Oshawa.
Yeah. You took a real hard run at the Sudbury people, which there's a lot of Sudbury people living in Ottawa now.
No, I didn't take a run at the people. Yeah. I took a run at the town.
Well, exactly. But crapping on the people.
And then I took a real, my run really started with the Big Nickel, the highly overrated Big Nickel.
The 30-foot high, you know what the value of that thing is? That's pure nickel. And
So what is the value of it?
I don't
Sounds
know.
Like you know the answer.
30 feet. It's heavy.
I was in Sudbury last winter, so I took a picture because we were bored, so we actually went to Science North and went to the Big Nickel. It is completely overrated. And so I took a big run at the Big Nickel and got some backing from some people, not from everybody.
Yeah. And I got to admit, and if you go to Sudbury, and Hammer's going to be there in the late fall, which is beautiful, it's just like going to the Sioux. It's a little different in the middle of the winter. No disagreement. If you've ever been to Northern Finland, this is part of
Why would you say that?
What do you mean?
Like, how many people right now would have been to Northern Finland? Well, if you've ever been to Northern Finland.
Well, that's the beauty of it. They haven't. But my point is that when you land into Helsinki and the airport's about 45 minutes north of the city, you feel like you've landed on the moon. And to Sudbury, when you land in the middle of the winter time and there is no growth and nothing going on and no grass and no trees, she looks like the moon.
Yeah. Okay? Jean has tweeted at us, I lived in Sudbury for 2 years, never saw the Big Nickel once.
What?
Laugh out loud. Oh, Brent writes, I see that thing every day. What an overrated piece of garbage. Wrench to the Big Nickel. All right, there we go.
We got some Sudbury listeners online.
Phil writes, I mean, it's big by nickel standards, which I guess is correct. Scott says, that being said, Sudbury is highly underrated. Great people, fun town, cool local music scene, gorgeous lakes. So there you go. Scott coming to the defense of Sudbury.
Well, I wish we'd be able to enjoy some of that stuff, but obviously we
And by
cannot.
The way, the dude that also, I think it was Jake, that is living up there right now, he's texted along all the great local spots that you can go eat at Sudbury. There's Teddy's.
Yeah.
There's the Doghouse Bar in Sudbury, best wings in Ontario.
Wow.
Oh, no. That's Slapshots in Bell Vegas, but thanks for trying. Yeah. That's number two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to that Slapshots with you.
One of the cool parts about going to Sudbury, Oshawa, you actually have people from Belleville that have moved to those places to upgrade.
I'm coming over that studio, Simmer.
All right, 7:21. The Lightning win. We'll get to that game in just a second. Interesting, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada had his weekly 31 Thoughts column out yesterday, and there was a couple of things regarding the Sens, which I found interesting. Wrote that Florida is a potential Mark Borowiecki landing spot.
Yeah.
Which, I don't think of Florida as a landing spot for anybody right now. They're looking, now Mark Borowiecki is not going to come in at a big salary.
Yeah.
But from all we understand in Florida, it's all about the mandate is on cutting costs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That an interesting little tidbit that's
out
there.
You talk about cutting costs. Okay, if I go down from 80 to 60 million, what will I try to do if I'm Florida? I'll try to gas Keith Yandel, who's making, what, $7 million, and then I'll backfill with Mark Borowiecki at, what, $1.8 million or $1.5 million, whatever it ends up being. So I actually think he could benefit by this, JR. And let's be honest here about this Joel Edmondson. I mean, this guy was a third pairing absolutely marginal defenseman for the St. Louis Blues 2 years ago that could barely get on the ice. I think he's improved. Now they say he's coming to play with Petrie. Like, when we talk about squeezing, you're trying to get, you know, costs down, you still have to have players. So I don't think this will hurt Mark, to be quite honest with you. And like I said, that would be a simple transaction in Florida. So no real surprise. What I tried to is kind of between Coach Q and Bill Zito, and I guess with Paul Fenton there, now what the connection is. But I just think there's a lot of people that recognize, you know what, at the end of the day, whether it's regular season or who doesn't want a Mark Borowiecki, and when it comes to toughness, you still got to have some of it, and the Florida Panthers are lacking in that department.
Now, they got local guy Mackenzie Weegar as well, who is an RFA, presumably will come in at a relatively low cost and give you some serviceable time. But you're right. I mean, Aaron Ekblad, I don't know what everybody thinks of him as a player, whether he's maybe a little bit overrated, but he's certainly highly paid at $7.5 million. You brought up Yandel. Now, Mark Borowiecki and Keith Yandel are not the same type of player.
No. But my point, hey, you know what? Someone comes in the office and says, listen, I got to get rid of certain guys. Well, first of all, Ekblad, to me, has never reached his potential. I think he's got real comfortable in Florida. He's also had the concussions issue, JR. So he's one of those classic. He's rated into the Jay Bouwmeester when Jay was in Florida, like just kind of on cruise, right? There's no pressure. You're living a great life. And then you go to a hockey market. But you're just saying you got to ship out some costs, but you still need players. So, like I said, I think that's where Mark will benefit.
Elliot Friedman wrote about potential landing spots. It sounds very much like Arizona, speaking of teams that are going to be cutting costs, will be looking to move in on Darcy Kemper, looking to retain or, I guess, get back some of the draft assets they lost in the Taylor Hall trade and then in the penalties from the NHL for the illegal testing of the junior players. Darcy Kemper at, what, $4.5 million for the next 2 years?
Yeah.
You really like him as a goalie. He says, writes, Carolina, Calgary, Chicago, Edmonton, San Jose. I guess we talked about that earlier in the week about all the teams that need goalies. I think those are the five. We identified six. There's five of the six right there that would be in on a potential Kemper trade, maybe looking for a first rounder in return. Would you give up a first rounder and all these teams picking in the high teens to early 20s?
Yeah.
And San Jose doesn't have a first round
pick,
but would you give up that for that goalie? And that salary?
At that age, a little concerned, but he is underrated. And if I fix my costs, 4.5, first of all, is value. If I'm Carolina, I got multiple picks, and if I use the least pick, I would think about it. I'd sure be a lot more comfortable with a second-round pick, but if that's the market for Carolina and I want to stabilize a position, I'll do it. This guy is rock solid, and like I said, for the next couple of years at that cost. And Carolina, let's look at the Carolina franchise right now. For the way this is operated and for where their team is at, they want to take a run at a Stanley Cup, right, in the next couple of years? I mean, that's what it is. I need a goaltender, and their goaltending, Mrazek has been decent. I got to find somebody I think I can win a cup with, and I think he can with Darcy Kemper, so the answer would be yes, JR. Because I can't kind of go through and be like, well, you know, let's try it out, and let's try out a two-headed monster again. Like, hey, let's solidify the position here. We got a hell of a hockey team, and we could end up winning a cup.
If you're Carolina, though, and you're sitting there with the 13th pick in the draft, there is very much the possibility that the Russian goalie, Askarov, could be there pick.
For sure.
So what do you do? Do you take the kid with all the potential in the world who could be your goalie for 10 years, 10 or 15 years, or do you deal the pick now and get the guy, as you said, that could help you potentially win the cup in the next 2 years?
Well, no, I wouldn't do the 13th, but they have their own pick and then they have the least pick, right?
Their own pick they dealt to the Rangers for Brady Shea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they only have their own pick.
13 for Kemper feels strong. Like that feels awfully high. Like I said, when New Jersey made the decision to trade for Corey Schneider, ended up being the ninth pick overall for Bor Horvat, but Schneider was quite a bit younger. 2 years on a contract for the 13th pick overall, that's a little strong.
What about if you got him to do an extension as well? What if you said, okay, well, you know, you can...
You can't.
You can't do it now,
but this is his extension.
If you felt comfortable talking raw numbers, no deal, but hey, you know, we want to extend you when this is done, okay, I'm open to that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it could be, but hell, what is he, 34 years old?
No, I don't think he's that old,
32?
Is he?
God, he was in, I guess he wouldn't be. He was in, when I went 2011, he and Doby were both in Minnesota's camp at the time. You talk about an organization that could never find a goaltender and then grab Devan Dubnyk off the scrap heap.
He's 30.
So 30 years old. You'd look at it, my point is for Carolina, but that just seems strong. That seems like a lot for him, but as I said, I do also really like him.
We spent a lot of time in the last few weeks and months talking to a lot of the, almost pretty much all of the high draft prospects coming up in this, I guess now next month's draft. That is 18 days away now. We're counting down. Yesterday, Hendrix Lapierre, a little local flavor from Gatineau, was a guest on In the Box with Steve Lloyd and A.J. Jakubek. He is playing now for Chicoutimi and, of course, underwent or had a lot of health issues last year, which initially were thought to be concussion-related. Then perhaps, well, according to his camp at least, more related to the neck. The boys asked him about his injury issues last year.
It was a long process, obviously. As you mentioned, at first we thought it was a concussion. We thought it was both concussions, actually. And then my symptoms were kind of weird. You know, like I was having headaches only in the morning for like 5 to 10 minutes. And, you know, it was kind of weird. And it wasn't the same as I wasn't feeling the same as my first concussion and my only one that I had in February 2019. So I told my agent and the team about it, and they were like, all right, well, maybe we can check if it's your neck. You know, we've had some players that had this kind of problem before. And so you know, I went to see a doctor that my agent trusted. And right away when he touched my neck, when he saw the x-rays, the MRIs, he knew that there was the problem. And the positive point is that the problem was really easy to solve. So I got my neck treated, and I was back on the ice 100%. And then February, March last year, and ever since then, haven't looked back.
All right, there's Hendrix Lapierre. You can hear the interview in its entirety on our website at tsn1200.ca. He also said during the interview that now that he feels he's healthy, he thinks he's one of the top players in this draft. And all it's going to take is one team to
for sure.
Everybody can see the talent, but it's the team or teams that are agreeing with his assessment on his health for him to get picked up by somebody.
Yeah, no, and go right to the 16th pick of the Montreal Canadiens. Could it be before? This guy's the absolute wild card of the draft. First of all, does your doctor believe and concur on the information that's given? When you talked about earlier, you talked about last year, there was a reference about him not necessarily being the highest end skill, JR. It was more about being a 200-foot player. Was that accurate?
Yes, yes.
You know, so where do you look at that?
Good two-way player.
Yeah, but no, I look at that, and hey, there's teams and probably scurrying up, opportunity to watch him play, checking him out medically. And what's sad, though, and even at the junior hockey level, and Ottawa has a great program, but you look at that from last year's perspective, is that now, okay, you get drafted, which is fortunate. Anything that happens injury-wise, the NHL team as a high pick is going to take care of you. But there's a fella that pretty much wasted a year of hockey because the wrong diagnosis of a concussion versus a neck injury, right? Like that's very unfortunate that ended up happening for him. And had it not been rectified before the draft, you know, he could have been a guy that's probably going in the second round of this summer's draft.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think, and again, we talked about this yesterday, with Ottawa having that third pick, which we know now officially with the Islanders being eliminated will be the 28th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
If the Islanders had been ousted earlier and that pick was a little bit higher, I think absolutely you'd look at Ottawa as a potential landing spot for this guy. Now, and not just because he's local, but he's a good hockey player. He's a center iceman, which they need.
Yeah.
But again, when you've got the first two guys, 3 and 5, you think you're feeling pretty darn good. You got two real good NHL players there. You're in a position where you can, if you consider it to be, gamble a little bit on a guy whose health is a little bit in question.
Yeah.
And boy, you can hit a home run with that. It may go bust, but you could also hit a home run by getting that guy lower, a little bit lower in the draft than really his talent level you know, should have.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, and again, that term gamble, you know, I don't want to go the Gabriel Gagne or guy that can't skate, but if there's spots where, for whatever reason, now unfortunately for the rest of the hockey world, everybody's onto this, right? There's other times where you have a great story like a Drake Batherson, right? Where you're just like, wow, how did he end up getting a guy like that? That's what you're always trying to do. In the case of Ottawa, and I'll say that last year probably with Shane Pinto, right? I mean, you know, hey, they had a lot of people were kind of shaking their head when they made the pick. Well, he ended up being just one hell of a hockey player. And when we had him on, it was as much of the decision. He didn't really start deciding hockey was going to be his future till he was, what, 14 or 15 years old?
Yeah, exactly. You know, really didn't take it seriously.
So it's always to the scouts. Tell me a story. Like, tell me why this guy. And we had Neil Smith on. Like, that was amazing. And I, even on drafts that I worked, JR, when they would sit there and know that they could get Nick Lidstrom, arguably one of the best, one of the best defensemen in NHL history, that you could sit on that pick and wait to pick him at a certain spot knowing that he'd be there, man, that's confidence.
All right. Of course, NHL draft coming up. Yes, 18 days away, October 6th and 7th. We'll have, of course, full coverage leading up to and on draft night number one. And, of course, day two will be on a Wednesday. kind of work day for everybody. You'll be able to follow along the NHL draft, and the Sens right now sitting with 13 picks, including 9 in the first 71. All right, we'll take a break, come back. We'll get into the Lightning and the Stars. Stanley Cup final is set after Tampa Bay eliminates the Islanders. We'll get into that and much more when we come back here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back, 7:39. JR, Simmer, and Hammer on this wrench-throwing Friday. On text at 12-1200 from unsigned, I'd like to throw a wrench at Pascal Siakam for going missing during the 2020 playoffs.
J'aimerais remercier félicité.
Hey, boys, say what you will about Oshawa, but will always be the home of the two founding members of the Canadian hair metal icons, the Killer Dwarves. While I'm at it, a wrench to the work or lack thereof being done on the 417 between Woodruff and Carling. That's from Troy in Orleans.
You know, Loops actually had to kind of drag me back in the bench.
Troy in Orleans probably has to drive across the city for his job.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Troy, just to pick up on the, because I live in Kanata, I got to drive that way. And in the morning, obviously, not really affecting, but in the afternoon. I can't wait for that construction. And I know those they're doing what they need to do. They got their own timelines or whatever.
Yeah.
But can we get it done, please?
Oh, yeah? Been a while?
I am tired of the cones and stuff. All like every day I drive there in the early morning, there's something going on. Like, I just want a brainless drive into work.
You're hitting those cones.
I don't want to be on
edge. They're just sending
them flying. Just let's get it done.
My ride up through past Mooney's Bay on Old River Road there, nice completion. Real nice from about Mooney's Bay all the way to Hunt Club, and then you get out to Old Riverside South. Oh, they just finished that off perfectly, and obviously wasn't the same traffic this past summer, so a shout-out to the crews there because they did a nice job. Nice smooth ride.
Wilf writes, a wrench to the NHL, where a player like Bobby Ryan and his 5 goals provides great value because his $7 million a year salary helps reach the cap floor. What's wrong with that picture? That's from Wilf.
Quit booing! These fans need to quit booing!
There you go. All right, keep the wrenches coming on this wrench-throwing Friday. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. It's 7:41. Let's take you to overtime. Last night, Game 6, Lightning with a win can clinch a spot in the Stanley Cup Final. Islanders trying to force Game 7.
Torelli plays it back in and goes burrowing in after it. Pumped it on further and continued to work. Coming by now is Goodrow. Goodrow around behind.
There's Doc Emmerich with the call, and his reaction, did he score, was the reaction that Anthony Cirelli had as well, because if you haven't seen the highlight yet, he takes a pass from behind the net in front, one-timer, little quick one-timer, goes off the post, actually goes across the goal line, hits the back of Varlamov's skate, and just skaters across the goal line. Cirelli actually has to keep skating and kind of look around to, like, he thinks it's in, but he doesn't know it's in until a couple of seconds. So a bit of a delayed reaction, but there's your game winner for the Lightning.
Yeah, and the Dockster in the basement had to switch over.
No,
to the
he's there now.
Oh, he is.
He is in Edmonton now.
I thought he switched over to the Canadian feed, make sure it was a goal. Then he went back to the play-by-play. That is difficult on that. And for Cirelli, interestingly, we talked about a young up-and-comer, point out a little bit. That was his first point of the series, but he makes it count. And they're also showing some of the footage, of course, scoring the winning game-winning goal in overtime for the Oshawa Generals to win the Memorial Cup.
Yeah, he is a clutch guy, and he is the guy that everybody circles as he's an RFA at the end of this year. He is an absolute kind of glue player, right? He's a Swiss Army knife player for the most part. You know, he can center a third line, be very effective, score big goals. If you get some injuries, he's the guy they moved up in the lineup when Braden Point sat out. And the production wasn't there. He's still a young guy, but he's going to get paid. And right now, Tampa Bay, I mean, they're not worried about it right at this moment in time. They're trying to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, for sure.
But he is a guy they're going to want to sign. And if to sign him and Sergachev, they're going to have to lop a couple of salaries off to make it to make it all work.
Yeah, you'll have to figure out something with Tyler Johnson, right? And a couple of guys there. Can you slide them out? Can you figure something out? We all talk about him being from Washington State, would end up being Seattle. But does Seattle really have any interest in a player like that? So, like I said, and for Tampa Bay right now, hey, you'll deal with all those things and all those problems. All you're focused on right now is licking the wounds, getting healthy for Saturday night, and hopefully winning a cup against Dallas.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. What is your Stanley Cup prediction? Do you like the Lightning in a short series, 4 or 5 games? Do you like them in a long series of 6 or 7? Or conversely, do you like the Stars in a short series or the Stars in a long series? As it sits right now, Simmer, you said your excitement level for the series is a strong 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
So you may not be necessarily watching on some days, but what's your prediction?
No, I mean, I'll end up watching, but I'm going to go a long series. My gut right now has me leaning a tad towards Dallas. My head has me leaning towards Tampa Bay, so I'll take Tampa Bay in 6.
Okay. All right, Hammer.
Man, I'm thinking about the Stars right now and taking advantage of this rest, and the Lightning, man, they're just banged up. I like the Stars in a quick series. I'm thinking 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
I'll say this for the Stars, guys, and write this down. If the Stars can get out and win the first 3 games, that would...
They're in the driver's seat.
That? I've got my pen in my hand. I missed it.
Right? If they do that, they would then be 1 game away from winning the Stanley Cup. So
yeah.
In this case, though, and to that, Dallas has to take advantage of Saturday night, right? I mean, to me, if they want to be in this series, and all they can hang around, no, Dobie's been great, but you have to. They got to win Saturday night.
You got to play some heavy hockey there and just pound the living daylights out of the Lightning.
Yeah, and that's what they're good. I mean, they've got a pretty good short court game, right? They don't have the back and forth that Tampa has. But that was a physical series, and hey, a lot of guys are feeling the grind right now.
Yeah, they got Braden Point, the Lightning did last night. So he missed 2 games in the series with what everybody thinks right now is a groin injury. Did you see that device that the trainer had behind the bench?
No.
So every time he comes off the ice, he's got something. I don't know exactly what it was, whether it's battery operated but it's some sort of roller. That every time he's on the bench, he's doing something down close to the nether regions.
Yeah,
the roller, not the trainer.
Oh,
that's
the electric groin roller.
Yeah,
he got that at AFS on Saint Laurent Boulevard.
for the single man.
where do you find that in the Edmonton bubble?
You have to order it online, but they promise on your credit card not to say what it was from.
Exactly.
Hey? Or have your name on it.
It just shows up as EGR, electronic groin roller. Yeah. Anyway, they had this device, and every time he came to the bench, the trainer would hand, and you could see him just kind of down there, kind of doing something. So anyway, he was, but it did not look for all the world. To tell you what, when he was skating around last night, he looked like the Braden Point of old for the most part.
Yeah,
so
and then I go back, you wonder lower body, and probably not related, but again, a player at the beginning of the year that on a contract holdout was coming off of a double hip surgery and really took him a while to kind of get up and run and get comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll see. Starting tomorrow night, that is the game one. Stanley Cup Final will be Lightning and Stars at 7:30. Note the start time. All the other games will be at 8, but tomorrow night's game is at 7:30. You'll hear it right here on TSN 1200. You'll hear all the Stanley Cup Final games right here on your home of the Stanley Cup playoffs. One other note, they're going to go every other night. So game 2 will be Monday, game 3 Wednesday, game 4 Friday. Game 5, though, if it is not a sweep, will actually go Saturday. So they are going, Pierre tipped us off on this yesterday, they are going to go back-to-back games 4 and 5. We'll be back-to-back next Friday and Saturday.
For yourself, power ranking-wise, because I know you were pretty excited the other night against the Celtics-Miami, so I'll throw that in there. But as a bit of a combo pack, Eagles, no, I'm going to remove Eagles because that's an automatic.
Yeah.
But between National Football League, if it's Lakers-Nuggets, also Celtics-Miami, along with any other NFL versus the Stanley Cup Final, where would you rank the Stanley Cup Final? Like if it was all on the same night?
Yeah. Well, let me just, okay, so last night, I got home from playing golf last night. My 18-year-old daughter is a bit of a sports fan. Love her for that.
Yeah.
She's upstairs watching TV. And so there's 3 options last night. Right? There's an NFL game. Now it's Browns-Bengals, but it's NFL, right? There's the Stanley Cup Final game. And there was the Heat-Celtics game. That's what she was watching.
Okay.
She was watching basketball.
Yeah, I could see there's a lot of people that would be on that. Raptors have done this where basketball's out in Canada. For myself, I'm not into the Celtics-Miami at all. I will be into the Jamal Murray. I love LeBron, so I'll watch a little bit of that. That would be darn close as far as now Patriots forget it. But that NFL game last night, it's pretty
entertaining.
It really did, and it felt good. Like I said, I want the Cleveland Browns. I don't want Baker Mayfield to fail. Have Mr. Chubb in the old fantasy football, so you kind of keep watching that, and for Mr. Burrow to end up watching that, it was really good. It was really, really nice to watch.
Yep, 35-30, by the way. Browns beat the Bengals in the Thursday night football game to begin week 2. If you have not made your picks, you forgot for this week, you've only missed one game, and the home team won, so it's only worth 1 point. Make sure you get your picks into our TSN 1200 football pick 'em pool for week 2. online, tsn1200.ca. Click on the banner right across the top. Make your picks. And again, our top weekly picker wins $150 from the Baton Rouge Steakhouse and Bar to fill your belly full of delicious food.
And funny watching last night, JR, they had 6,000 fans. I don't know how they arrived at that number, or you know, but it was interesting a couple of times that Mr. Burrow, with the piped-in noise along with the 6,000 people in Cleveland, credit to them, was having a bit of a hard time kind of relaying the calls. Like, there was actually enough background noise last night that
so
made it fairly
entertaining. So it wasn't piped-in
sound?
It was just fan-generated
sound?
No
combination. No, okay. They can go up to the 75 decibels, but the 6,000 fans, I can relate to. And if I said to a rink, good old New Haven, when I played the American Hockey League, used to be the LA Kings farm team. There are 2,500 people in New Haven that can sound like 10,000. And if you've ever been to an Islanders game, I mean, 6,000 of those Islanders fans could sound like 20,000. Like, it's just neat how certain crowds. But, yeah, there was actually a fair amount of noise. It was decent background noise for the game last night.
Right. We should not forget as well, last night there was the Blue Jay-Yankee game.
Ooh,
right? Game three.
Jays are peaking.
Game three in New York, right? The Yankees had won 20-6. And 13-2 in the first two games, and had 6 home runs in the first game and 7 home runs in the second game. Surely to heavens, the Blue Jays pitching staff was going to bounce back in game three, right?
Here's Stanton, and he swings and hits a long drive to right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone. The ball went over the grandstand and up into the bleachers. A Stantonian home run. Giancarlo, no si può stopparlo.
That's lame.
Just stop.
He's sounding quite a bit older now, isn't he?
John Sterling?
Hey? Yeah.
Well, he's calling them from his house, right, or wherever he is. So he's a million miles away from Buffalo. But that was the fourth of 5 home runs that the Yankees had in that, what was it, the third or fourth inning? Whatever it was. They had 5 home runs in one inning, including 3 on 3 pitches. 3 pitches in a row. 3 home runs. They had 6 home runs in the game.
It's batting practice.
So, yeah, exactly. There were, 19 home runs for the Yankees in this 3-game series, which is a Major League Baseball record.
Huh.
16 was the old record, so they had 19 home runs, and they outscored the Blue Jays over the 3 games 43-15.
I think we got to check this stadium, make sure they don't have some gigantic industrial fans blowing from the concourse out, although the Jays didn't hit any. But my God,
they're turning the fans off when the Jays are up.
Exactly.
Everything
knocking out 19.
Does anybody, and I didn't see the highlights last night, Hammer, every home run I feel like I've ever seen in the Yankee Stadium goes out to right field.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's
right.
the short porch there, right field.
Okay.
Big time. They're just sock.
Well, it was that way in the old Yankee Stadium as well, correct?
Was it? Was the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, don't you remember Derek Jeter's controversial home run? The one where the young fan.
Oh, for sure.
Fan?
Yeah.
That was like a long fly ball just carried and carried and carried. Yeah. So, the new Yankee Stadium is a bandbox for sure.
Coach Montoya, he's fine. No worries here. Hey, you've got a bad series. Previous to this, we either tied or won the last 9 series. Hey, sometimes you have got a bad series. So we'll move on from this, and they've got a doubleheader against the Phillies, who I think have equally poor pitching staff.
They have a terrible bullpen.
So it should be fantastic baseball.
The Phillies bullpen has blown more saves than has saves, which is almost impossible to do.
So the Jays will somehow figure out a way to allow the Phillies to have 3
just
saves.
Try and take all that in.
Exactly.
Now, if you're a starting pitcher, and wins and losses are somewhat important, but I guess in a blown save case, at the end of the day, from a finance standpoint, cash, it's going to be more innings pitched and, you know, basically your own ERA, right? That's what you're judged on versus necessarily wins and losses, especially when you have a stinky bullpen?
Man, I don't think you can judge any player on their performance this year. It's such an anomaly. Larger rosters. And the way the Jays are using their pitching staff, too, 1 inning here, 4 innings for a starter, getting them out even if they're having a nice outing, and all the double headers that they have, pitchers being called up, being sent down their little neutral hubs in Rochester in the Jays' case, I'd be really hard-pressed to really look at any player that's having a bad year and blame them on what is just a crazy, crazy season, and a short season at that, too.
Sounds good.
All right, there we go. 7:53. Tell you what, let's take a break. I was just catching up on a wrench. Rob wanted to throw a wrench at the Blue Jays for their effort against the Yankees. So here you go, Rob. There you go. Blue Jays and Phillies with a doubleheader today. 7:53, we'll take a break. When we come back, We'll have our oddshark.net best bet of the day. I got a rebound here. I'm coming off two straight losses. I'm not in a good spot right now, old JR.
I'm having a good week here. I think I only have one loss this week.
Nobody asked you how you were doing.
Nobody asked you either.
I'm falling on my sword. I'm gonna hit one for the weekend.
And
I'm
feeling patting myself on the back.
Nice. Nice.
Simmer?
And Simmer just makes it up. Because, hey, I think I took the over in the football game last night. I'm pretty sure. I don't remember what I picked. All right. We'll take a break. Come back. Pierre's going to join us from Edmonton after 8. Jim Montgomery, good friend of the show, has got himself a brand new job, assistant coach with the St. Louis Blues. We'll talk about that, his journey, and a little preview. His old team, the Dallas Stars, in the Stanley Cup Final against the Lightning. Jim Montgomery will join us after 9. Keep your wrenches coming at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. As we roll on here for a Friday morning, getting you set for the weekend with Sports Radio TSN 1200.